It's The Takeaway. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. Earlier this month, the Food and Drug Administration reduced the amount of time men have to wait to donate blood after having sex with another man. Prior to this, the policy said men had to wait at least a year before they could donate. Now, the waiting period has been reduced to 3 months. That decision came after a dramatic drop in blood supply across the U.S., as many churches, schools, and other venues canceled blood drives due to COVID-19. But as this pandemic rages, the need for blood hasn't diminished, and not just because there's need for plasma donations to try to treat COVID-19. There are still victims of car accidents, gun violence, and cancer patients, all of whom still need blood donations at this time. In Michigan, the TV station WDIV Detroit reports that the shortage in donations is causing major problems for hospitals.
The email from Michigan Medicine echoes what every hospital is dealing with across the state. I am standing in the blood bank at Michigan Medicine, it starts, in Ann Arbor. I am looking at the refrigerator that contains only one day's supply of blood for the hospital. The hospital is full. There are patients who need blood and cannot wait.
So now that the rule has changed, we wanted to revisit how this policy has affected our past. We asked you how these regulations have affected you at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
This is Jonathan Nichols from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and I believe that this is one of the worst policies to ever be put in place by the FDA. It greatly offends me, and I have personally been denied the right to donate, and it was an awful experience. It just makes you feel like less of a human than everyone else just trying to save lives.
My name is John. I'm from Miami, Florida, and as a bisexual man, I've had a couple different experiences with donating blood, but recently I've just started lying on the questionnaires. I learned that they have to test all the blood regardless of who it comes from for HIV and other diseases commonly sexually transmitted. So it seems like a stupid rule to discriminate against a group of people.
My name is Dallas. I live in Dallas, Texas, and I work for a large company that often has charitable events, including blood drives, and I always avoid the topic at work because people either don't know that I'm gay or they don't know about the restrictions, and it always leads to an awkward conversation. So now every time that happens, I just avoid the topic of the blood drive entirely.
Hey, this is Amy in Morristown, and you know, I have trouble giving blood because one of the questions is, have you ever had a boyfriend who turned out to be bisexual? And in fact, I did a long time ago have a boyfriend who was bisexual. When I found this out, it was still during the AIDS crisis, and I was just like stunned and furious because obviously you can just wait. You can test the blood. There's so many other things that are also bloodborne that don't stop you from giving blood. So it's a ludicrous, ridiculous barrier in the first place.
Some of our listeners, like Angus Cosgrove from New York, don't think the new relaxed FDA restrictions go far enough.
The blood, which was unacceptable just weeks ago, is exactly the same blood which flows through my veins today. And that just makes me feel like a second-class citizen in the eyes of the law. After this is over, will my blood suddenly be inferior again?
This is Matthew from Seattle. I think it's ridiculously discriminatory to restrict men who have sex with men from donating blood. I work in HIV research, and the notion that we are still focused on MSM as the primary carriers of HIV is dangerously outdated, as it ignores true risk that any sexually active person faces, and that's actually along with many other methods of transmission. If we are really in need of blood, as we are, it's unconscionable to arbitrarily restrict large groups of the population from donating.
To learn more about the history of these restrictions and the effect they're still having today, I spoke with Alfonso David, president of the Human Rights Campaign, and James West, deputy editor of digital with Mother Jones Magazine. James recovered from COVID-19 and wrote about how, because he's gay, he was unable to donate blood, which contains plasma that might help researchers find a cure for COVID-19. I first asked Alfonso how these restrictions came about and how he feels about this latest policy change.
In the 1980s, during the HIV/AIDS epidemic, there was a high prevalence of the virus among men who have sex with men, and there was no reliable test for the virus. Accordingly, the Federal Drug Administration justified a blanket ban on blood donations for men who have sex with men. and that ban was implemented in 1983. That ban was not changed until 2015, at which point the FDA changed their policy from having a blanket ban to change it to 12 months, so that a man who have sex with a man could not give blood for 12 months after the last sexual contact. And the FDA justified the change by suggesting that it was to better align the deferral period with other increased risk factors and what other countries were doing. And they also looked at a number of different studies to determine that this was the most appropriate policy. As of last week, the FDA yet again changed their policy from 12 months to now 3 months, suggesting that men who have sex with men are prohibited from donating blood if they have sex within the three-month period. They have to effectively be abstinent for 3 months or wait for 3 months after the last sexual contact. It effectively targets LGBTQ people, and specifically gay men and bisexual men, from donating blood simply based on their identity and is not focused on risk factors.
James, you had COVID-19, you recovered from it, and you wanted to donate your plasma for some sort of frontline therapies, but couldn't. Tell me a little bit about that experience and why you wanted to donate your plasma in the first place.
Yeah, this whole thing got really personal for me because as my head was pounding and my throat was sore and I was coughing during the worst of it, one of the things that allowed me to have a little bit of hope was the idea that my plasma, which is inside my blood, which has potentially some COVID-kicking antibodies in there, could potentially be given to other patients in far worse situations than me in new trials called convalescent plasma trials. Now, this is just getting started. They're looking for donors. And so, you know, of course, I wanted to help. I wanted to put this very bad experience to some good news. And that's where I ran up against this roadblock, which I have before because I've always wanted to give blood, but never been able to. And then this came along, and of course, the people doing the collecting have to abide by the FDA rules, obviously. And so that's where it got really personal to me. And I just really wanted a way to, you know, I'm sitting in my apartment with this army of antibodies. They just happen to be a gay army of antibodies, and they're not getting put to any use now that I've recovered.
What was that like? I mean, that must have been just incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, it kind of sucked, to be honest, because, you know, this is where the rubber hits the road, right? There's a blood shortage, but there's also these other potential promising treatments. Of course, the scientists say that a lot still needs to be known, but I would love to be part of that solution, and right now I can't.
When we think about how the policy has affected the medical community over time, and even during this pandemic, do we know kind of what it has done in terms of limiting available blood supply for hospitals, donation centers, et cetera?
The Williams Institute conducted a study estimating that the 13 million LGBTQ people who live in the United States, 42% of the population identify as male. That's approximately 5.46 million gay, bisexual, and trans men who are precluded from giving blood and have to wait for 3 months. Now, another interesting statistic. In the United States, 8.5% of men, which is about 10 million men, say that they have had sex with a male partner since they were 18. And 4.1% of men, which is about 4 million, say that they've had a male sex partner in the last 5 years. Another 4 million reported having a male sex partner in the last 12 months. So what we're effectively doing is precluding between 5 million and 10 million men from donating blood during the worst pandemic that this country has seen.
James, as part of your reporting on this, you spoke to the Red Cross, which is one of the organizations dealing with the shortage in blood donors. What did they tell you about donating blood?
Basically, they're in the tank for changing this policy. They want to see more advocacy to close down this gap, to make sure that the LGBTQ community are more involved in blood donations in general. But my understanding is they don't go as far as Alfonso is advocating there, to get rid of basically basing this whole thing on identity and moving more to risk factors, like what kinds of sex that you have.
Well, Alfonso, let's talk about the science a little bit, because as you mentioned, this comes from the early days of the AIDS epidemic. Is there any medical reason, essentially, for these guidelines to still be what they are? Or do we know so much more now about HIV transmission that it's just kind of a misconception?
It's a misconception. I think this policy is rooted in bias and is a vestige of the past. Every single donor is screened for risk of transmissible disease by questionnaire, and each unit of blood that is donated in this country is routinely screened for various infectious disease pathogens, and that includes syphilis, hepatitis, the West Nile virus, Zika virus, HIV, bacterial contamination. So we already test our blood, the blood that is donated, to determine whether or not it has various infectious disease pathogens. Now, we recognize that there's a latency period in which some of these pathogens may have to be tested again. But the bottom line is there is no reason to effectively exclude men who have sex with men from donating blood, because we have the science to determine whether or not the blood is actually contaminated. And also another important point, there is no deferral period in many countries around this world. Argentina, Chile, Colombia, Italy, Mexico, Russia, South Africa, Spain, there are no deferral periods. Individuals can donate blood in those countries. There is no reason why in this country we are not being driven by science, and instead we have a policy that is essentially rooted in bias.
Alfonso, one of the things that I'm struck by here is where we are in 2020 versus 1983. We have PrEP now. We have therapies for HIV. There are all sorts of things, even just asking someone about their sexual history, that could help lower risk. Are those things under discussion in terms of trying to, as you say, create a risk-based profile for donors, as opposed to one that just says, well, this is who you are?
Yes, those issues are being discussed. In fact, the Human Rights Campaign met with the American Red Cross, one of the largest blood donation centers, to discuss a shift in position and really focus on developing an individual risk-based assessment. Under these guidelines that the FDA has just announced, just to illustrate the absurdity of the policy, a person who has had unprotected sex only days before can donate blood. But a gay or bisexual man who has sex with another man within 3 months of the date of donation cannot, even if that man uses condoms or is taking HIV prevention medication such as PrEP. So as opposed to focusing on risk factors, which is what the FDA should be doing, they are instead focused on identity. And as I mentioned before, there are many countries around the globe that do not have deferral periods. We should be really focused on science. And we are pushing the FDA, we're engaging with other blood donation centers to really rethink this policy, because it's really unfair, it's illogical, and it's discriminatory.
Do you think this is potentially an inflection point where regulators could say, wait a minute, maybe we really should change this policy going forward?
That's what we're hoping. We're hoping that the regulators can take a step back and recognize that the policy was really rooted in fear and bias when it was implemented in 1983, recognizing that there were no scientific tests to really determine how they could track the virus. And people were living in a state of fear. So they implemented this policy, but we are imploring them to take a step back and recognize that the underlying rationale that supports the policy is outdated. And we're hoping that this is an inflection point, that they are going to be able to take a step back and look at the policy and reform it and really focus on risk factors.
Alfonso David is the president of the Human Rights Campaign, and James West is the deputy digital editor of Mother Jones Magazine.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.